I'm Elisa Mortensen, and this is Undo Redo. Let's take a look at all the things that happen in life that we would like to undo and have a chance to redo.
Hey, everyone. I'm really going through some things lately. Maybe I'll just get it off my chest with you guys. So we are spread all over the place, all right? But I've also been in a celebration mode lately. Like, I'm really excited about where I'm at. It's been so fun to appreciate where I am now compared to where I was stuck for so many years. And it wasn't that long ago, you know? So if you haven't done this before, take a minute to really connect with your growth and progress as compared to not that long ago, a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 5 years ago, right? We are so much further. And remember when you're deep in something and you're struggling to get out, remember that you're going to be somewhere else in the future. But back to the sadness, like I am feeling lots of sadness and separation. And so there's these contradicting emotions. I'm like in the middle of a celebration, but I'm also so sad and pulled, right? But at the same time, because I've had such extreme like light and dark, that contrast has given me such gratitude and appreciation for like the array of emotions that we get to experience. I feel like I'm really alive lately. Like I'm really living. My husband has been working in Idaho all week, and we helped my oldest son move to Nevada for a work opportunity. And my daughter left for Maui on Monday. I dropped her off at the airport. She's renting a space and looking for work there. My other son and his fiance are in California. All right. And I'm in Utah. So how many states are we up to? Five? And it feels like I could be like, wow, we are so far apart, but we're actually not. We're very connected on social media and bantering back and forth all day. But my youngest and I are here, home in Utah, and my special needs sister is even here staying with us. So it's not like I lack in people. I'm not home alone necessarily, but we're spread all over the place. And I'm so looking forward to the time that we'll be able to get to be in the same place together again. And I do not have any idea when that will be. Maybe Christmas. I don't know. I'll cross my fingers for Christmas. And if it happens anytime sooner, I will be elated. For this episode, do you ever hear someone who you love and value their opinion and they recommend a book that they liked? I do care what they enjoy, right? Because I value their opinion. And I just finished one called The Go-Giver's Marriage by John David Mann and Anna Gabriel. There are several go-giver versions when I looked this up, and they all use the same concepts aimed at different areas in life. So there's the go-giver business, the go-giver influencer, go-givers sell more, go-giver leader, the go-giver teacher's guide. And the one I read was the go-giver marriage. The reason I'm going to outline this or give a review in this episode is because everyone knows deep inside they could put more thought and effort into their marriage, relationship, or whatever it is. And even though I really like where Dan and I are at right now, there's nothing wrong with making things better, learning something new. Right? Stagnation is what really slowly chokes out marriage. Sometimes it's not some big blowout or some, you know, big issues with trust. A lot of times it's just because you're stagnant and you just slowly feel like you grow apart and out of love with each other, and everything that was fun and exciting doesn't really, you don't see it each day. Most people have these underlying dissatisfactions in their marriage in one area or more. Even though they don't know it, because it's revealed in the narrative that we tell. I hear people speak to me, and a lot of times it specifically comes out in the form of a complaint, right? They often favor themselves in the story they're telling me with bias in these narratives, right? They write these narratives in their head, and it pits themselves against their partner without being aware of how dividing those thoughts are. That they are writing their narrative with those dividing thoughts and stories. So it adds and perpetuates more division, us or them. And most of the time it just feels justified, right? We're justified because the other person's poor behavior, and like somehow it excuses our own poor behavior. For this episode, I'm going through the outline of the book and showing you the five things that they teach, sharing my thoughts on them. I promise these insights will be worth your time. And for those who aren't married, this still applies to you because it can also be used in all interactions in relationships you have with a boss, a parent, a friend, a coworker. I mean, these concepts are pretty basic. And you know, the Go-Giver, did you hear how many books they wrote? They just change their story and apply it accordingly so you can do the same. The book starts out with the first concept of the Go-Giver marriage. It's appreciation. They point out this innate desire that all of us have since birth. It's the need to be acknowledged and liked by one another. The authors help the reader question themselves in kind of a right here, right now way by highlighting how often do you appreciate your person or someone else around you. Through story, a lot of short stories, they suggest many ways of increasing this skill of appreciation. Giving you many different examples, hoping that it opens up more ideas for how you could apply it in your relationship. Appreciation helps you stay away from things that bother you. It helps you stay in the game of finding things you like. They really drive in the importance of expressing it too, saying it out loud, because keeping it to yourself keeps that kind of happy, warm, fuzzy feeling inside you. And not sharing it and expressing it is a missed opportunity to invite others in to that feeling and reinforce it. It's a needed pattern for you and them. And this is my thought about it. I'm like, that is so amazing because it gets you out of the cup half empty and puts you into a glass half full. And I love it because I call it being seen. How often do we fail to appreciate others? Do we really see them, or are we just seeing just what they're doing at the moment? It's a form of gratitude, and gratitude has been proven by science to be an antidote to all our emotional disturbances. So we could all use this prescription, right? It's a healing prescription. Think of how loud and determined we are when we're voicing what we dislike and disapprove of. That can get nasty, right? And loud. And man, we mean it. Let's apply that to appreciation and gratitude. What if you got really loud? I mean, you might scare someone, but get really loud about what you like about them, right? This is just me being me. I'm overdone, but problems take our minds over if we allow them to. And sometimes you just need that fight and fight the good fight to get out of it. The disapproving thoughts will always be there. They're going to come because our minds are wired for problem finding. Brains are going to offer it to you all day long, but you don't have to take them up on the offer. And we know where that gets us. We know ourselves well enough. We've done it long enough. We know where it's headed. So think about it. You know your patterns. So what can you do to put in place in form of a daily practice of finding one thing to appreciate about your person daily, or one thing to appreciate about each person in your life daily and journal it? Imagine getting one simple sentence a day from someone who noticed you, someone who appreciates you, someone in your life that's like, hey, you always do this thing and I want to tell you thank you because you always do this thing and I really like it. You set a reminder in your phone. If you aren't a person who's going to do it every day, then you know you won't. It'll remind you. Text or call someone today. Tell them something that you really love and appreciate that they do or that they are. And the most important part for finding this daily thing is that it trains your brain to look for it. The opposite to this one of appreciation is criticism and focusing on their like minor irritations. You know, they look for everything they do wrong already all day and they make it mean something's wrong with them. Don't add to that. Don't be that person that adds to that in their life. Okay, the second one is to attend to them. Number two is to attend. Being held and comforted by others is basic. Authors point out in this how obvious it is that not one person wouldn't love when things are done for them. When someone pays attention to you enough to know that you need a note or a hug or a small gift or some food prepared for you, thoughtfulness goes a long way, especially when you notice things and do things for someone that they didn't even tell you about. Because it shows you paid attention. noticing what they like and doing things because you want to be the person that does that for them is so rich. The authors also explain in this book that the opposite of being attended to is being neglected or took for granted. You know, people not feeling like the need to do anything for you, you know, people around you not putting in the effort or thought. They just feel like what you're capable of doing it yourself. So there's no, you know, attending to you needed. So this is so true. Not noticing someone can look like being brushed off, not being cared for, and giving gifts that you love to somebody else. For example, if you love white chocolate, when the person actually really loves dark chocolate and you give them white chocolates and then you get some, that's like the opposite, right? That's not really noticing. And because you didn't pay attention enough to notice, no one had to tell you, you know what, I really love dark chocolate the most. You just are in their life enough to notice they love dark chocolate and I want to be the person that gives that to them. I don't really like it, but I'll do this for someone because I want to be that for them in their life. I'll add here that the most unhealthy and toxic things you can do is expect the other person to attend to you. Like they should notice me. They should know these things. Because the only thing you have total control over is how you attend to them. So make sure your focus isn't on something outside of your control. And from what I've seen, the major piece of this is if you would like the other person to attend to you in a certain way, just kindly request that of them and be very specific about it. Teaching them how to attend to you by requesting it is so effective. It can be if they want to do that thing, but leave it up to them, right? So they don't have to pretend to do and be something they're not just to please you, right? That would be fake and end in resentment because it builds from something you didn't genuinely want to do or be. But be aware of sometimes when we think like they should be attending to me or they should notice my needs, because this can be very destructive. The first was appreciate. The second was attending to them. The third one is allow them to be just as they are. And the authors are very firm on teaching acceptance. They say that letting the other person be who they are and be who they are and the way they are, not needing anything to change, and taking responsibility for the energy you're bringing to the relationship. They're saying allowing is both sides being able to bring whatever they are with them to the relationship. Now, in this section, they tell again, like in every section, they tell multiple short stories and examples of this concept. And they speak of it in a way that, like, first there's this honeymoon stage and it's all about generosity and kindness. And then it patterns into family history and your environment and conditioning, and that starts to come out. And when we notice those things in the other person, we start demanding they change their behavior so we can love them. And that's where the condition comes in. It puts a condition on our love for them. Our giving love to them is now conditional. Neither person wants the other person to keep score. So just don't go there. Well, I did this thing and you did that. They also teach that each person, each individual has a bubble. And when they come together, where the bubbles overlap is called intercession. And they name it the us part of the relationship. And they say that this space needs to honor all the things each person is. Now, my thoughts about this are I'm a big fan of allowing, and using it as a continuous practice is necessary. I call it holding space or honoring their agency. When I teach about allowing them to choose their own experience they're having. And if it's a poor, negative, awful one and they have a bad day, let them. Each individual person has an individual growth journey. Allowing them to be themselves stops you from feeling the need to fix them. That's what I teach, and that's usually how I say it to my clients. When you think someone is wrong, it feels awful inside of you because you make it mean bad things and you create such false stories around it that leave you feeling unsafe. But safety and security come from within yourself. So you don't need to change them so you can feel better. You just know you're solid and you can get back to a loving space. And that creates the safety that you're looking to have. You decide, no matter what someone does, when I choose love, I get to feel love. Oh, I don't feel love right now. Okay, what do you need to get back to a space to choose it? Because when you drop the grudge, then you have the peace. And when you address your resentment, you grow in benefit. So this concept is actually what has changed my clients' lives most tremendously. Dropping all expectations for the other person and allowing things as they happen, knowing you can remain in a place of love when you want, and when you don't choose it, you feel horrible. That, my friends, is really how to live. Okay, moving on to the fourth concept. Taught in the Go Giver Marriage book, it is to believe. We each form this idea of who we believe we are from the information we gather. This isn't behavior-based. This is much deeper than that. We remember the conversations that we've had over our lives with the person, and without a doubt, they knew we could accomplish the thing. We didn't believe it ourselves yet, but that person knew we could do it without a doubt. Their belief was strong. And belief this strong can bring unshakable trust between two people. Everyone has really loud insecurities. We need someone to believe in us. Do what it takes to see them for who they are and not what they are doing. Okay, because we all behave poorly oftentimes. Your belief in them must be visible when they struggle most. This is really important as far as the authors really kind of grill in this one. When the struggle's happening, when you see them in their shame, guilt, anger, and sadness, and they're behaving from those places, they teach us in this book, just like appreciation, that you say it out loud and you express it very openly. And over time, it has a lasting impact on the person who's giving, because they're looking at this person behave really poorly and be awful, but you're seeing past all that into the root core of someone. And so the person who's giving the belief, as well as the person receiving the belief, it's very powerful. And also, they tell us to make certain that you remember not to disengage with the person. They express that it's of utmost importance that you instead you lean in and believe in them harder. Believe in who they are to their core under it all and share it with them. You'll find that you're no longer assuming what they will do next or what they're thinking or feeling. The book outlines that the absence of communication, so when you disengage with them and do not communicate, our minds naturally and constantly make up narratives that fill in those blanks. Because we need resolve, we need it to make sense. And it always goes to the worst case scenarios. So our narrative writes out what they're not saying and we just make assumptions. It projects our own critical nag inside and our own fears onto what they're doing. The authors teach that trust and communication are one and the same, and when one is gone, the other one fails. So trust is a belief. And they say that intimacy and money are the first areas that show the lack. And it's all the lack of communication. Trust is built by having a belief in one another and expressing it. The expressing it part is so important because then none of us are assuming the worst case scenarios about one another. And my thoughts about this, about the belief part, is I am loving these. Because again, it's about agency, right? Putting effort into directing attention, directing your mind to what you do believe about the core of that person instead of just seeing them for what they're doing, trains your brain to find more belief. Because what is most hard about this and what I have found is in our struggle, our best is pretty bad sometimes. Like our best really sucks, but sometimes that's all we got. Okay, so our bad days and our lowest moments, when we have the worst choice making, decision making, and outward expression, that is when you believe in someone the most. That is when you need someone to believe in you the most. So you find belief in them, whatever it takes. You express it and you communicate it. My very favorite part is when they say lean towards someone when they're in the struggle, because we all want to just knee-jerk reaction at that moment. You're either going to run and hide and disengage, or you're going to attack and lash out, depending on your own tendencies, in order to show you're in such disapproval, and you're going to want to correct them as if we're doing any better in our life or have a right to correct them. But if you are truly able, make a decision and decide to sit with them and show them all the things they're doing right and how deeply you believe in them. Help them borrow your belief. How do you believe so strong in someone when they struggle and they're acting awful? Help them borrow your belief in them so they're able to own and be okay with all their insecurities. You're not demanding any perfection out of them, so maybe they won't demand all that perfection out of themselves. And both of us can be okay with this form of open communication. All the uncomfortable mess, it's okay. That's the work it takes to get to trust. Just believe and let it be. Trust believes big, you guys. Trust believes so big. And it also needs more information. So we need to be communicating. We need to keep talking to each other, so our minds don't like come to these jumping conclusions and make resolve with things that are untrue, right? Now, the opposite of belief would be to get after or like ignore someone. Remember, their struggle is when you see their poor behavior. So you don't join them, right, with your knee-jerk reactions and point out more of the things they're doing wrong. Be the one who believes in them so big that you make them question their insecurities and give them all the insight you have to everything they're doing right and how amazing they really are, because all humans are amazing. This is the belief we want for us and them. Do you see how it benefits both people? One gets to find belief when there's no outside, like, immediate reasons to believe. And the other one doesn't believe in themselves at all at that time, too. It doesn't do anybody any good for nobody to believe in the person. And this takes a lot of practice, you guys, and it is using your agency. That is your superpower. And I know I'm going to say it hundreds and thousands of times, and maybe you'll remember one day. It takes practice to be intended in these ways, to put the effort in, and it's work worth doing to help everyone reach new heights. Okay, finally, the last one, number five. Number five is to grow. Yeah, it's to grow. And they talked about this one on a scale of like, there's these four and then there's five, and they're each on like the side of the teeter-totter and they're equal. So five, growing, this is a big one. Sometimes merging in too much of a way has an underlying sabotage. The authors say both individuals must strengthen themselves individually and not keep score of who's doing what and who's coming along better. It makes for two separate people to be strong, to be fulfilled, and to be progressing. So when they come together, you give yourself to them while becoming your best self. So the go-giver wraps it all up with teaching that love is a verb, and that a practice daily of verbing love doesn't just happen upon us. They're not just words that are said. Appreciating gets specific and thoughtful, looking for things that they don't tell you. Attending demonstrates, and you give something in a way that they receive it. Allowing lets us struggle, and that's not the easy part because we all want to stop it. Believing is focusing deeper to the very essence of someone else's soul. And growth loves both of you. It loves you enough to go to the side and improve yourself, not needing the other person, so you can bring your new and best self to the relationship always. They say that keeping your identity separate from theirs is necessary. All right. And my thoughts on this one, my thoughts on growth are And they also said in the book, and I didn't write this here, but when you dream big, it promotes belief in yourself, and then it's easier to see the belief and the growth in them and what they're aiming for, and that they haven't become what they wanted either. They're still working on it. These are my thoughts on grow. You need to keep your identity separate from theirs to avoid codependency, because becoming so involved in the other person that you no longer have an independent feeling or thought, you take on all theirs. All their thoughts and all their feelings are forefront in your mind, and you don't even know where your own are. It just keeps it separate. So we have no excuses, no blame. It's not their problem when you don't, and it's not your problem when they don't. We're not projecting our lack onto each other. So merely owning yours, your own growth, and doing your best and taking care of it does indeed give them their ownership back for their own growth so they can take care of their own. And oftentimes this is where I come in as your coach, is because healthy boundaries and how you show them the way you'd like to be treated is key here. Our behavior and our responses often keep the cycle of whatever's happening going. And as a coach, I help you navigate all of this. And no two answers will be the same, because no two people are the same. Coaching gets you to new places that you don't even know exist until you get there. But borrow my belief in you and allow yourself to be a mess. Attend to your own needs. Appreciate how hard it is. This is what I do for you. I'm a go-giver as well. I'm going to be a go-giver coach, right? Come learn alongside of me what it takes, because it only takes you. You don't need to wait until the other person's on board with addressing issues. All you need is you. All you need is your own decision, your superpower. So choose to do this. It's hard to navigate all these issues, especially when it involves another person. You know, we've all got like kids and spouses and people at work and you name it, but we all bring energy to the relationship, and it's time to own the energy we have. It's time to get rid of petty dissatisfaction and irritation and have a better life. Men are that we might have joy by choice, right? Okay, I'll talk to you soon. And if you thought of anybody while you were listening to this whole episode and the book review and everything, please share it with them, because the heavens need to reach people and it needs to go through us to do it. So if we are mindful of other people, we can help him reach them. All right, we'll talk to you again soon, either on a call or next week's episode. Bye.